The Permian Basin will be producing for decades to come as we continue to innovate and find ways to improve recovery. I think we've seen in many places in the world, especially recently, whether you're talking gas in Europe or critical minerals with China, energy security and national security are linked. The U.S. is blessed with an abundance of natural resources, and we now have an administration that wants to see the energy industry invest in those resources to make sure that America's energy strength translates into economic strength and competitiveness, and importantly, security. We've gone from an administration that openly declared its intent to try to reduce and eliminate our industry over time, and we now have an administration that sees American energy strength, American energy dominance, as linked to economic competitiveness. We've seen a policy shift. We've seen senior cabinet officials that actually understand energy. And look, this administration wants to protect the environment as well, but it wants to use the resources of our country to support our economy and our security. And we've seen that in policies across the board.
That was the voice of Mike Wirth. He's actually the CEO of Chevron. And he was talking to Maria Bartiromo on Sunday and just really grabbed my attention. You know, if you talk to anyone who's in the energy world, and I know a few people that are, they are off the charts excited. I remember talking to my friend from Vancouver, British Columbia. He was our guest probably almost a year ago now. But he was so excited about America's future because he just saw a boom ahead of us in every way. Now, we have to keep our heads straight on our shoulders about what really matters. It isn't just economic growth or success or prosperity. It's, of course, it's the character of our country that we're also concerned of. So I don't want to indicate that I feel any other way than that. But today we're going to focus on the energy boom. It is just amazing what's happening. We're going to go all the way out to Abu Dhabi and talk to an American businessman there, Jonathan Bass, who's the chairman and CEO of Argent LNG, that's liquefied natural gas. And he's in the middle of a meeting over there, actually. So he stepped out to talk to us. And it's just fascinating what's happening in the world in regard to energy. And so we'll do that in just a minute. I don't need to tell you that we're in a moment where lies spread quickly and they become sort of the mainstream, all the lies. And truth feels, even just speaking it, it's costly right now. But for Linda, the cost of silence could have meant the end of her baby's life. When Linda learned that she was pregnant, she knew abortion was wrong, but fear almost consumed her and led her to a very dark place. She didn't know where to turn. But then God led her to a preborn network clinic, and there she was met with prayer, compassion, and a truth that pierced through her fear. Linda chose life for her baby. Preborn shines truth into the hearts of mothers deciding between life and death and their baby, and that's why I love that there are supporters. They make this show possible because I'm on the same page. I am concerned about saving babies. I'm also concerned about reaching their mothers with what's true and what isn't true and the blessings of motherhood and God's creation, all of that. And that's what Preborn does. If you haven't yet donated to Preborn, it's $28 for one ultrasound, just $28. Of course, any multiple of that will be used very wisely and well to save as many babies as possible. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, this is Sandy Rios, in case you haven't figured that out, and the podcast is Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. Now, it's not a live show anymore, so you can't talk to me, not in that way. But if you send us a message, I listen to it, and I will use lots of them on the air, as many as we can. So would love to hear from you, 662-821-2040. The same thing goes for email. If you just write us at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net, we read all of those. I can't respond to them. I don't have enough staff to do that. And I wish I could. I've always regretted that because each and every one of you is important to me. And I want you to know that. But I do read them. And we will use as many as we can on the air as well. You can catch us on any social media platform, just the regular stuff, Facebook, X, Instagram, Truth Social, YouTube, Telegram, probably some others too. But you can also find the podcast on any podcast platform. If you've never podcasted before, you're not familiar with it. And by the way, it's really easy. And the nice thing about it is you can listen any time of the day. You can stop and start it. You can fast forward it if you have heard some parts before. You can share it easily with people. So you can do that. The simplest way is to go to sandyrios.com. That's my website. Go there, and it's very obvious that you can listen. And so that's an easy way. But if you are a podcaster, go to Apple or Spotify or Amazon. Any of those platforms have Sandy Rios 24/7. And of course, not last, but absolutely not least, is AmericanFamilyRadio.net, AFR.net for all of you AFR talk listeners who listen to me on the morning show a number of years. This is probably a familiar place for you. So just go to AFR.net, look at the podcasts, and find Sandy Rios 24/7, and that's how you can listen. Well, this is a very interesting show. It's kind of, you need to get out a piece of paper and a pencil, because a lot of things that are said, you might not quite understand at first. You might have to run it back and listen again. I might have to do that too. Jonathan is, this is his life and his work. And so, but the things that he says are very profound. So I think that you're going to really benefit from listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
I think the most important thing to tell people about the Permian Basin is that we've never endured a harder cycle than the last 4 years when we had a hostile administration, the Biden administration, that really wanted to kill this industry, that wanted to kill the crown jewel of energy production in the United States. And I took this personally as I represent the men and women that do this. I mean, they drained the SPR for political reasons. They taxed natural gas. They magically found a number of endangered species, animals that people have never heard of. They attempted to impose overbearing air quality regulations. They attempted to impose a fracking ban, and they actually banned the export of LNG to our allies and our partners around the world.
All right, that's the voice of Congressman August Pfluger. He's a congressman from Texas. And today we're going to be talking about the incredible unleashing of our energy. I mean, there's so much of a change, so much of a difference from the time Obama took office. You might remember that he said energy prices will necessarily skyrocket under my leadership. And people clapped and laughed, you know, but they didn't really believe him. But that's exactly what's happened. And so with Joe Biden, it actually even got worse. Well, we have talked with our next guest before, but honestly, he is the expert and all these things. His name is Jonathan Bass. He's the chairman and founder of Argent LNG. Remember, LNG is liquefied natural gas. And he's speaking to us from Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. And it's, I think, 9 o'clock at night, 9:25 for him. So, Jonathan, we do appreciate you joining us. Thank you. And welcome.
I appreciate it, Sandy. Thank you again for having me.
Okay, so I have to ask you right up front, what are you doing over there? Can you tell us?
So this week is, these next couple weeks are a very big week for our energy dominance and our energy policy in the Middle East. And it's interesting that, you know, Trump is in Asia while the Secretary of Interior is in the Middle East right now in Saudi Arabia, going into Bahrain and then into Abu Dhabi. We're here as Americans on really energy dominance. It's not about production, it's about leverage.
Okay. So Secretary Burgum, you had to remind me before we went on the air. I'm familiar with Secretary Wright, Secretary of Energy. I've heard him speak a lot. And of course, Doug Burgum is familiar because he ran for president, but I haven't heard too much about him in his capacity of Secretary of the Interior. Explain to us why he's there and what he's doing. What's his job there?
Secretary Burgum is, Secretary Wright and Secretary Burgum are leading the front on energy dominance, strength through design, not weakness. Under Biden, it was a strength through weakness. Under under President Trump and his team, it's strength through design, strength through energy, strength through strength, not weakness. And our energy policy is the leading force. The light switch is the foundational brick of any economy to begin to flourish. It provides jobs, it provides hotels with electricity, it provides factories with the ability to run, it provides education, universities, and computers. It's the foundational brick of any economy, and it should be trusted in the hands of the United States of America because we are the most trusted ally for any nation to have.
Interesting that you should say that because I was just looking. Well, I believe that. But I also think sometimes the nations that are supposed to be our friends don't look at it that way. I just saw that the European Union wants to spend more on Russian gas, and they actually spent more on Russian gas than they did on Ukraine aid. They complained to be so pretend to be so concerned about Ukraine, and yet they are continuing to buy Russian gas. And so they don't often act as though they trust the Americans. I know that President Trump has tried to dissuade them from using Russian oil because that is just building up their reserves to fight the war. So I don't think I'm sure that the Middle East understands we've done enough dealings with them through the years with oil and gas. And I where are they? I'd be interested to know, Jonathan, how they feel about natural gas and fracking and all of that. Because they have a lot of the natural oil. And so how do they feel about these new processes?
So the United States is the partner to the Middle East. Baker Hughes drilled the first single well in Saudi Arabia that started the flow of energy into the region. ADNOC, 5% of ADNOC is owned by Baker Hughes. ADNOC drilling that provides the flow of energy from the Middle East. U.S. energy companies are at the forefront of technology and development within the region. Going back to what you had said about Russia, Russia is aligned to China. After Putin's meeting with President Trump, what did he do? He went back to Beijing and announced that they're going to build a pipeline diverting Russian gas from Europe to China. If the Europeans don't understand what is facing them in the future, the hard wall of reality is going to come to affect them. And energy is the beginning brick of an economy. You can't have any economy without energy driving it.
It's kind of like, I mean, this may be a simplistic illustration, but it makes me think, Jonathan, of something very basic. Like you could have great ideas, great innovations, great lots of things. But if you don't have money, you know, money is kind of the fuel for ideas. And but you're right. Energy is absolutely essential to protection, fighting wars, to heating your house, to communication, everything that we do. It really is important. And I think Americans have had such a free flow of it for so long. We have to stop and think about how blessed we really are, honestly. But so what are you guys talking about there?
So one of the things is, you know, every person I sit with sits and talks about the value of the U.S. dollar. And I try to explain that Trump's policy is making the world's energy more affordable. Mm-hmm. And by lowering the value of the U.S. dollar in the world, it makes American energy more affordable in other currencies. It allows them to afford cheaper energy to drive their economies. It also allows America, with the US dollar, to be a more attractive resource than the rest of the world because we're selling in dollars and we produce in dollars, and it becomes a way in which the Chinese have used to artificially reduce through the foreign currency exchange their cost and be cheaper, we are actually playing the Chinese at their own game. So affordability is globally strengthening American energy dominance and partnerships around the world by lowering the physical cost, by lowering the value of the dollar. It's not that our dollar is worth less. It's that Trump is actually trying to provide American energy to countries of shared values at a cheaper, lower price without impacting our economy.
So, that's just very interesting. I'm just going to let that soak in. When I was growing up, the Saudis, OPEC, of course, were the largest oil producers in the world. And I think America depended on them a great deal. I don't know why, because we had our own oil reserves. How has that changed? And has it changed? I mean, I think it has, but how?
Look, the Saudis are really the most aligned country to America. Today, we would not see the movement without MBS, Princess Rima, and the Saudi relationship between Trump and the United States in the region. Saudi Arabia is the guiding light within the region and the example in which we should follow. He has what we have, which is under President Trump and America First. He has a Saudi First policy. He's trying to elevate industry, economy, and education within his country and lift all boats rather than just lift single boats. And that started with the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, he actually went in and tried to normalize and equalize everybody. MBS is, I was involved in the Syria relationship. MBS was one of what I call the tripod in making what happened happen. It was required to have the U.S., MVS and Al-Shara in there. But we have to lift the region. We have to lift opportunity within the region. And Saudi Arabia is actually the closest thing to America within the region. Predominantly, all Saudis in government are educated in our universities. They think American, they act American, and really they almost are all American. And it is an incredible country that aligns with America. And it's in a very important week between Saudi and U.S. relations right now. There's FII going on in Saudi Arabia. And it's very important that we understand who our friends and allies are and who we pin the tail on the donkey.
When you say leaders in the region, are you talking about all the Middle East? Or are you speaking of particularly that particular narrow region?
I think all the Middle East. I mean, under President Trump, we have friends in Abu Dhabi. We have friends in Bahrain with Al Khalifa. We have friends in Jordan. And with Al-Shara and the opening between Trump and Al-Shara, we have an opportunity to change the trajectory of the Middle East. Look, when I said to you that energy is the foundational brick of an economy, energy is the play in which we all begin. Manufacturing begins with cheap energy. The cost of energy in the Gulf, in the Middle East, allows us to be able to move supply chain from China, our enemy, to not our enemy, actually. We didn't make China an enemy. China made us the enemy.
Exactly.
But it allows us to move supply chain back to the point, closer to the point of consumption, by utilizing more affordable energy in the Middle East, more affordable labor, a highly educated society, in moving from China into the Middle East. And it is what the Chinese fear the most, is this regional development in the Gulf away from China, because that services Europe and America in a very transparent and close proximity relationship. China is buying cheap energy prior to the U.S., now from Russia. And cheap energy allows their economy to flourish. If we take energy and manufacturing and move it into the Gulf. It becomes the hub and spoke of the region. And we actually hurt 750 million Chinese Politburo members while we're lifting all boats rather than a single boat.
You know, this actually happened just a few days ago. I'm sure you're aware of it. And that is that the Treasury Department put a sanction on major Russian oil companies because, and they're demanding the ceasefire. But that, you know, Russia's really getting pinched. And I don't know if you can comment on that. So China is depending on Russia for most of its oil or energy reserves right now. Is that correct?
Yes, and so is India.
Oh, in India, that's right.
What we can't trade, looking 15 years forward, Sandy, is trading what we bet on China to be a good actor with India to be a good actor. What we need to do for our economy is lift the all boats. So that means that we have to analyze Bill Clinton's move of bringing China into the WTO. Prior to the WTO entry of China, we had a globalized supply chain that was based on quota systems. And we were forced to use our soft dollars to invest them into nations around the world to lift all boats. All countries of shared values. We used Walmart soft dollars to lift Guinea, Algeria, to be nice players, Morocco. Now we have a single source supply chain base that Walmart can invest all dollars into China and lift one boat as opposed to the rest of the boat. And so I think at the end of the day, energy is the foundational brick of lifting all economies. And we have to diversify our supply chain to move it closer to the point of consumption so that we actually reduce what's impacting our globe in what they want to call energy, you know, fossil fuels. It's not. What has impacted our globe is single source supply chain, meaning we went from 20,000 ships to 60,000 ships heating our waters at 4 nuclear bombs a day. So what we've done by going to single source supply chain, which benefited the Clinton family and their shares in Walmart, to moving it again around the world and diversifying supply chains and opening up competition around the world rather than single source dominance.
But you are not, Jonathan, let me make sure I understand. Because you're an American through and through. We still Correct. Want to be dominant. You want America to be dominant because things can change, you know. Our relationships can change and presidents can change. So we're working to American dominance while we help lift other nations that are allied with us. That's what you're saying, right?
So what I'm saying is that, first, America is God's country. Americans are God's people. We believe in all people. We're the only nation where you can come to America from any nation in the world and become American. There is no nation in the world that welcomes talent, immigrants, hard work, and makes them Americans or national. You can't be a German. You can't be a Japanese. You can be an American. So we are God's land, and we lead with God's power. And God, yes, I believe that as a Jew, I believe that the children of Abraham lead this world into a good place. And we lead it by actions, not words, not BS. We lead it with our actions. And American people are really the best natured people in the world. And yes, by lifting other countries of shared values, we elevate all of God's children. And we never look to, you know, we fought a war, Sandy, our first major war where we lost over 800,000 lives was the war between the North and the South. And it wasn't about dominance. It was about unfair labor practices. And we believe in free and fair competition as Americans. But yes, we need resources from all over the world to do what we need to do. when China shuts down our rare earth minerals and tries to hold us hostage, we need other partners to step up and supply us with rare earth minerals that allow our, you know, night vision goggles to work or our aircrafts to live. So we live in a codependent world, but we need the right partners in the codependent world. China is not the right department.
Right, right. Well, I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. And you said it. I'm just reaffirming. We don't want to lift the boats of our enemies. But I do think I would like to see America still be the dominant player in this and calling the shots. And by the way, this headline just popped up this morning. Trump was just in Japan, as you know, and they made an agreement on rare earth and critical minerals. I didn't know Japan had them. Did you? Did you know about this?
Well, yes. So we have rare earth minerals in Canada and in the U.S.
Okay.
We have the environmentalists on the Democratic side who are fighting the exploration and mining of rare earth minerals in our own country. We are a country that can be independent without any other nation, but we have to embrace what we have in front of us. So I wanted to just add to one thing about, you know, this issue of how we lead in from the front. America is the leader in the world. What Donald Trump has done in 8 months has actually changed I've been traveling now for the last 8 weeks. I was in Peru, I was in Dallas, I was in London, Istanbul, and Morocco, I would say in the last 2.5 weeks. I haven't been in an Uber driver, a taxi, a hotel that was not pro-Trump. The people on the street love our president. They respect strength. They respect leadership. In Turkey said to me, "It is finally great to see a leader of the world. I just wish he could last longer than 3.5 years. And it is very true. The world needs a leader. And America is the leadership because we come from a good place. We come from a good heart. We are really good people.
I agree, of course, and of course that we are probably the only country who ever spent money rebuilding their enemies after we defeated them in a war. We've never taken territory. We're not like the British did. Colonials. We're not a colonialist society. All of that. No, it's just true. And I think I'm very proud of what President Trump has done. And I do know what you're saying is absolutely true. So, let me ask you a follow-up question on this rare earth and critical mineral thing. So I remember Canada, as I recall, had some rare earth minerals, and I think Hillary Clinton led the negotiation for sale or the rights to that to, as I recall, it was China. And that's been a long time ago. But if we have these in our country, is it something that's very difficult to mine or explore or cultivate? I mean, if they're in the ground, is it really hard to get to them?
No. And actually, Joe Biden sold our largest copper mine in Africa to the Chinese. So we have had a tradition of Democrats selling our resources to the Chinese. And you wonder who is in bed with who. You know, yes. I wanted to, you had said something very interesting about our president. When I asked President al-Sharaa of Syria, when I met him, I was the first American to meet him. We'd spent 4 hours together. And I asked him, "Mr. President, do you want to be the next on the list of Japan and Germany? Or do you want to be the next on the list of Libya, Iraq?" He said, "I want to be the next Japan, Germany." I said, "Sir, then you need President Donald J. Trump. Because for us to support a nation to become the next Japan and Germany, it needs a leader like the leader we have sitting in the Oval Office. We've gone through leaders who have promised and delivered nothing. We've had the McGurks, we've had the Sullivans, we've had the Barbara Leafs. We've had these people who have gone around the world and promised empty bags. We finally have a team that actually wants to deliver for the better of the world. And by the way, I'm a CEO of a company, and I always look to hire better people below me than I am. When you want to elevate a country, you want to elevate stronger companies under the leadership of the Americans. And we have that in the team that the president has put together. We have a team that's incredibly hardworking, from Marco Rubio to Secretary Bergamon to Secretary Wright to Tulsi Gabbard to, you know, Governor Noem, Secretary Noem. We have a very strong leadership in the Oval Office to lead the country and the world into a betterment for its people, for the street. If we elevate the life of the street, we make life at home better for people. They choose to work rather than shoot. They don't want to join ISIS because they'd rather put steak on the table for their family. They'd rather have a family than go and shoot themselves up for the wish and dream of getting 70 virgins. Leadership is the difference that will make a trajectory change in the world. And we need the world to follow America. And it's going to be the choice between China and Xi Jinping or America and Donald Trump. And I think the world is hungry for Donald Trump. From what I've seen on the road, from what I've seen on the street, I can tell you that I have not heard one person outside of America say that they were not proud to have Donald J. Trump in the office.
Oh, I think you can see that at the EU. You can see it on the European stage. I mean, it's reluctant. They don't want to do it, but you can see that they actually do respect him, and it is pretty incredible. I want to ask you something. This is a little bit of an aside, but one of the things, I used to live in Berlin, Jonathan, years ago, and so, but a lot has changed in Berlin since I lived there. For instance, now they've gone, I think they've just gone off the cliff with their policies. I don't even recognize the country anymore. The people are struggling, the economy's falling, and yet, just this week, they blew up. I mean, okay, first of all, I gotta say this. They were noted for using nuclear power. They had all these nuclear power plants when it was very counterculture to do that. And yet, now they've changed. And the Greens in Germany have managed to get the government to destroy their last two nuclear facilities. They did it just this week. I saw them blow it up. What's going on there? What is the meaning of that, the effect of that going to be on Germany, you think, and the rest of Europe?
So the problem we have with Europe right now is that they have this net zero plan by 2050, which means Uniper as a company in Germany has to be out by, I think, 2040 of American LNG.
Germany, oh, LNG in total, even? Even LNG, not just, I thought maybe it was fossil fuels. I don't know if natural gas comes under that, but I didn't know that. Okay, so.
Yeah, and so, please go. So in fact, what Uniper has been, whether it's Uniper, Cefe, the Germans, have said, okay, we're going to be net zero by 2050, which means every company has to be out by latest 2047 out of fossil fuels. So that means that they are really driving their economies towards Niagara Falls. They're really going to hit a dump because they have no means in which to power their economies without energy. It's this fictitious reliance on green energy, which is not really green, because if you take the ecological impact of a solar panel or a wind turbine from mining it all the way through to producing it, it requires more energy to manufacture it.
Yes.
Then it will produce in the life of its being. So without fossil fuels, the world will fail. We, you know, everything that you look around, whether it's the mic you're on, to the paint on your walls, to the fabric on your clothing, everything is dependent upon fossil fuels, and this ability for us to recognize our dependence on fossil fuels, which comes from underneath us and is natural in its state, and using it in its processed method, is benefiting our world. And if you turn around and you tell the Gen Zs that they can no longer have a cell phone because they don't have fossil fuels, I think they're going to say, what? What are you talking about? So dominance of energy and green energy in the world, this transition, which is, I call it the Alaskan bridge that the Democrats had paid for to nowhere. It's green energy because they believe in promising things that go to nowhere. And exactly. There is nowhere in green energy because it does not provide baseload energy to drive our economies. And economies need fabric, work, jobs, and we need to have it. Now, if they take the money, the trillions of dollars that they have hoodwinked the world on spending in green energy, and they put it to making what we have better, more efficient, efficiencies, reduction in emissions, we would have invested our dollars in a more effective, better way than designing a system that will never work. We're not reinventing a wheel that's going to end up being a cube. We need to invent reliable resources that we can continue to have lives. We're not all going back to the caves. We're not going to have a bat, and we're not going to go, ooh, ooh, ah, ah. You know, we need to have our lives moving forward, not backward. And so they're embracing where we are and saying, okay, you know what? We need to make what we have better. Well, let's start with putting production closer to the point of consumption and getting rid of, you know, Chinese ships. Chinese ships today, Sandy, the top 15 largest ships in the world, written by Industry Taps and The Economist, equate to 780 million automobiles. That's the world's population of carbon output of cars equals 15 ships from China that do 84 voyages. We have 59,000 ships on the water today. 15 only equals our world's population of cars. So even if we took all vehicles and made them green, we would not impact the disaster that China has created, that the Clintons, in pushing the WTO for the benefit of Walmart, has impacted our world in the way in which it has. Single source supply chain will go down as a single destruction of our planet, our governance, and our world.
That is so profound, Jonathan. I don't doubt that because you have a sense of it, whether it's Amazon or just a monopoly on the source, Amazon, Walmart, whatever, to have one source. It's just, we see that. Businesses are gone out of business. It's really hurt people. It's convenient, but it's hurtful. And so, you know, one other thing I was going to mention, I know you know this, but I'm just going to mention it for my listeners' sake. My understanding is that China manufactures all these wind turbines that we use.
Correct.
And that they, on the other hand, don't use them at all in China, that they don't use wind turbines. So they're exporting they're exporting that to us, and it's turned out to be a disaster, in the ecological disaster for birds and for the sea creatures and all of that. It's bad.
So if you look at a wind turbine, Sandy, you need so much concrete in the ground to hold that wind turbine up. The energy takes to produce the concrete, just the concrete, is more energy than the turbine will produce in its life.
Wow.
Forget the birds, the trajectory, the wind patterns. The president is 100% right that wind does not work. And, you know, I learned something as a supplier to Walmart. There were two things I learned that have impacted me in my business career. One is COEs. It's correction of errors. The ability to walk in every day into a meeting and say, you know what? We made a mistake. Let's correct an error, a COE. Let's redefine it. Let's fine tune every day. It's like changing your underwear. We need to look at what mistakes we've made. And wind turbines is a mistake. The second is open dooring, making sure that we are able to confront without persecution, confront those that are making mistakes honestly and with heart and with the right to do better by our consumers.
I know. I'm just going to say it makes perfect sense because I think at least this is how I'm taking what you're saying. That may not be exactly what you meant, but wind turbines and all the other alternative energy sources, I think a lot of people were earnest and there was some success in that, but we're finding out that it's just not working. It's not working. And I think that's what you're saying. We shouldn't it's just time to change courses. And I think that's what President Trump is doing. Can I ask you, I want to ask you a practical question, Jonathan, before I send you back to your important meeting, which I have to say, I'm honored that you stepped out of it, given the important stuff that you're into. But here at home, you know, gas prices have gone down pretty much everywhere. I was out in Boston. They weren't so cheap there, but it's gone down pretty much everywhere. And my understanding, it's because an alliance of like 22 countries, I don't know what the entity is, agreed to start producing more oil and gas. And so our prices went down. But now that's going to be changing, they're saying. So just what are your thoughts about that? And what can people expect? And why is this happening?
You know, when we go back and we look at history, everybody tells us that the prelogue is the beginning of our future, right? So if we go back and look at how we look at what we've done wrong to dictate how we fix it. If you take California, which I'm a Californian, and I've had a failed governance in California, we have the highest prices of energy in the country. We have the highest cost of living in the country. We have the highest cost of food in the country. We're failing as a state within the union. And why we're failing is because we have this misconception on change. We have to buy into a narrative, because if you don't buy into the narrative, you're persecuted for being out of the narrative. And so when we look at energy in the world, we look at what President Trump has done, and we look at Uganda. Prior to President Trump coming in, Uganda offered the lowest cost of energy to its consumers in the world. And the reason was because Uganda's currency was stronger than the American dollar. So what the competitiveness of the dollar allowed, and what President Trump saw, was that coupled with energy abundance, we can have strength through by design, by allowing our dollar to be lower in value. We can lift jobs in America because automatically we become cheaper just on the exchange rate. And everybody's saying, well, it's the end of the US because the dollar is of low value. No, it's actually the beginning of the US re-industrialization moment, because our dollar is more competitive, we become cheaper against the world on other products. So the president has it right in what I call our energy dominance, led by Jared Agin and Brittany and the team within. Our energy dominance council is leading in one way, our dollar policy is leading in the other, and our security and national security comes in right behind it. But we will make a resurgence of industrialization, because every past government, every past imperial leader, whether it's Italy, Spain, France, England, when they lost manufacturing and industrialization and went to colonial practices, they lost being the leader in the world. What President Trump, I believe, not knowing him, knows is that if we lose our industrialization and our innovation, which comes with universities and engineers and education and the 90% of the iceberg that's underwater, if we lose it, we lose the future of our country. We can't afford to lose America for our children and our grandchildren. We need to stand, fight for the future of our families and to be the leader in a world which is dying for strong leadership and honest leadership. And what President Trump represents is honest leadership. Everybody can throw darts at him, but they seem to all fall. And the reason they fall is because at the end of the day, he's good. They say, he's anti-immigrant. And I say, he was married to three women, and two of them were immigrants. He's an anti-Semite, but yet his daughter is Jewish. His other daughter is married to a Lebanese. He has the most blended American family that exists in the world today. He leads by example. And so everybody who wants to tear him down is wrong, because what they're doing is they're tearing America down. They're tearing our foundation down. And we need to fight to stay in the leadership position in the world, because strong leadership leads America first, an America first policy, which is good for the world. We don't want a China first policy. We don't want to go to bed thinking that, you know, Putin is the leader of our world, or Khomeini is the leader of our world, or Xi Jinping. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we have the choices that we have, the Americans need to understand that this is a world playing field. The roulette table from 000 all the way to 36 is not just America. It's every country and every leader. And everybody wants to be the dominant factor on the table. And Xi Jinping wants to be the mothership, and the rest of the world's to be the colony that depends on the mothership. And if we allow that, it would be the end of the future of our country. And it will be the end of opportunity for our nation, our children, and our grandchildren.
Yeah, very well said,
Jonathan.
Thank God
Donald J. Trump was protected from the bullet and survived to give us 4 years to be able to change the trajectory. And hopefully we have a position of future with, you know, who God will bring us next.
Yes. Well, and also I don't think there's ever been anybody in that office who understood the world, you know, all 200 and however many countries there are, the way he does, and the way he moves easily from culture to culture, and just has an intuitive understanding of people. It's amazing to watch, Jonathan. And so I'm glad to know that you are there representing at least your company and probably Argent LNG, but also the United States. And so we appreciate Secretary Burgum's part in this. And just, I'm with you. When I watch those cabinet meetings, I can't stop watching. These are people of conviction who love this country, very capable, competent people. And it's an exciting time to be an American. So, Jonathan, thank you.
Sandy,
again,
before I let you go, I want to add one thing that people won't know.
Okay.
Through this period of time over the last, since President Trump has been in, we have one person named Tom Barrack, who has been the target. Ambassador Barrack has been the target of the Democrats, and is a fighter in the region, and is a fighter for America, and a fighter for peace in the region. What Ambassador Barrack has been able to do within this period of time under the leadership of the president has been quite incredible. You know, and we can't let these things go unknown, and these names that contribute to the future of our world. And I just personally want to say, you know, that as an American, I'm proud to have the president, and I'm proud in the decisions and who he's picked to lead our country through a very turbulent time out here in the world, and to gain strength back and to stabilize a very roaring sea to a calm lake. And it's through the people who he's put. And Ambassador Barrack is really one who's getting a lot of oncoming fire, but has done quite an incredible job in leading forward the agenda of America in the region, and is quite impressive. And I hope that God continues to give him the strength, the life, and the health to carry on to take us through a very turbulent time in the region.
I'll just add that Tom Barak is the U.S. ambassador to Turkey, and he served as special envoy to Syria. So that's very controversial right there. So I get what you're talking about. It's nice to know that, because I wouldn't have known that, Jonathan. So thanks for sharing that. Well, listen, we wish you all the best. And Lebanon? All right. I didn't see that. All right. Yes. Well, thank you for just joining us. And I want to remind you that Jonathan is the chairman and CEO of Argent LNG. And isn't your company based in Louisiana?
Correct.
But you're
in Port Fourchon, okay, Louisiana.
But you're from California.
Correct. They had to, California, we had to leave to go to safer, smarter territory.
Okay, I get it. Oh, I get it. Okay, Jonathan Bass, thank you so much. And again, all the best with your meeting, and we look forward to catching up with you later. Thank you so much.
Take care. Thank you, Sandy.
You too. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Since Roe v. Wade was overturned, 105 abortion clinics have shut down. But that doesn't mean the women disappeared. I mean, they're still searching, and they're now more desperate than ever. And Planned Parenthood is racing to fill that gap. That's the largest abortion provider in the nation, Planned Parenthood. But we, being preborn, can get there first, with compassion, with truth, and with life. Where 105 abortion clinics once ended life, Preborn is claiming that ground by installing 105 ultrasound machines that speak louder than fear and show mothers the miracle of life. Like with Emily, who was abortion-bound and scared, but when she heard her baby's heartbeat on a preborn ultrasound, she broke down in tears and whispered, "I didn't know she was real." And that moment changed her entire life and the life of her baby. You know, an ultrasound machine is not cheap. It's more than $28. In fact, it costs $15,000. But you think about how many times it's used and how many babies' lives that it saves. I know that not many of you listening to me can afford a $15,000 gift, but I bet some of you could. It's amazing how much money many of us still have, in spite of hard economic times for others. It's just, there'll always be people who have money, and there'll always be poor people, and somewhere along the spectrum from that. But some of you, I'm sure, could write a check for $15,000. It's tax deductible. You know exactly where it's going, and you know exactly how it's going to be used. And so I just want to challenge you to consider doing that. And of course, if that kind of leaves you out because you don't have that kind of money, $28 will pay for one ultrasound for one mom and save one baby, or maybe twins, who knows. But I hope you'll be generous, whatever is your gift today. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, it was a gloomy, rainy day last Saturday, October the 25th of 2025. That's the year we're living in. And that was the sound of something happening in Germany. It was Gundremmingen, Bavaria. Bavaria is one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's where they have all those flower boxes. It's where the people wear lederhosen and have the festivals and wear the hats with the feather, the wonderful traditions of Bavaria, a very Catholic area in Germany. Okay, so what happened there? Well, you heard me kind of mention this to Jonathan Bass, but I'm going to read it from this article in Zero Hedge, and I'm quoting Tyler Durden, who wrote it. And he says, In Germany, two cooling towers at the former Gundremmingen nuclear power plant were demolished almost 4 years after the last reactor was shut down. Thousands of people came to watch the spectacle, according to the police. So the people were, it was fun. They just had a great time. The green energy people were so excited. And reading about what actually caused them to do this, because the nuclear capabilities of Germany were legendary. When everybody else was doing away with nuclear, Germany did not, which is a very smart move because the nuclear power plants were supplying 30% of Germany's power. It's just amazing. But they, you know, in Japan and Fukushima, there was kind of a meltdown of one of the nuclear cores. And so they freaked out and decided that they would do away with nuclear energy. The problem is Germany doesn't have any sources of natural. They don't have natural gas. They don't have coal, at least not much to my knowledge. And they just can't produce their own. They have to borrow or buy it. So they've just, it's like suicide. This is like energy suicide because the German economy is already in trouble. So I have no idea what's going to happen there. They are so ideologically driven by the left, by the views that we would consider to the left here. But I mean, they're left of our left. I mean, they really have just gone off over the cliff. I remember in Berlin when I lived there years ago, it was very different. I mean, it was right after World War II, and I think there was a lot of shame. They didn't even want to talk about the war. They were sort of ashamed of their brothers and sisters and dads. And at that time, many were alive who still fought in that war. But over the years, they have just become increasingly more godless. This is the country where the Reformation started, Martin Luther, and the 95 Theses, and the just shall live by faith. It's the birth of the Reformation, of the beginning Protestantism, and all the churches that most of us attend. That was the birthplace. Not anymore. I mean, they really, truly are nearly a godless country. So I think, you know, the fear of God, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And the more people eradicate him from their country and from their lives, the goofier, sillier, dumber they get. And I think that's what it's describing Germany right now. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jonathan. I would have taken a little time, probably I would have taken issue with him on what he said. I think that the administration and evidently Jonathan and maybe some of the others with him believe that they can woo the Islamic strains of the Middle Eastern countries away with economic benefits. Look, that may be true for lots of countries. I think Jordan and certainly Iran, if they could get rid of their ayatollahs, and some of the other countries. But, you know, the whole teaching of Muhammad has been in place for a very long time. It's newer than Christianity by like 700 years, but, you know, it is entrenched and it has lived through time, and they never really change. They want to kill or convert the infidel. They work through violence, beheadings. It's part of the Quran. I don't think you're going to bargain them away with the oil supplies. I really don't. I wish we could, but I think it's going to have to be a spiritual change. It's going to have to be the God of our fathers, manifested through Jesus, who brings the Holy Spirit, that power, that real power, to combat that very dark power of Islam. But we'll see. Maybe there'll be some of that in our lifetime, some shift in the Islamic world. It would be nice to see that for the sake of the people who live there, who live in darkness. They do live in darkness. They love black. They love death. It's just amazing. But I know the Saudis are not like that. I mean, I don't know. I can't explain that culture. Somehow they found a middle ground. It's not so middle for women. I don't think women can still get out, and certainly in the United Arab Emirates, they can't get out. At least they couldn't a few years ago when friends of mine were missionaries there without, you know, a head covering, and they had a different role in society. Not much of a role, actually. So I don't know. I would have asked Jonathan about that, but I didn't want to get us bogged down because we were talking about energy, and he made some good points and taught us some important things about it. So with that, I think it's time to say goodbye. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I also want to thank Preborn because we could not have a show if it weren't for their support. And I just appreciate it. I love what they do. I love what they do. So if you agree, you want to save babies the way I want to save them, by letting moms see their babies with the ultrasound. I remember when I saw my son, it was just incredible, just incredible. I was so thrilled. And so if you'd like these women to have that chance, the ultrasound is so much more sophisticated than it was when I was a young mom. But if you want to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.